Hey, kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grunt Boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast.
Every trait that integrates a winning personality, yes, the PVQ is what we'll do to find out who will see us through. Yes, the PVQ is A-OK.
That's right, we're the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom, The Simpsons, from seasons 11 and beyond, and the new episodes when they air. Why do we do it that way? Well, the entity known as the Wheel of Random has said there's plenty of podcasts that have discussed the golden age, that being seasons 1 through 10, so it tasked us to find some gems out there from the latter seasons. And when I say we, I'm not talking about me, because I'm just one annoyed grunt boy named Craig. With me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy,
Steve. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Steve. How are we doing this fine week, year,
day? We're doing all right on this day, week, year.
Yeah. One of the few gloomy Julys we're recording this.
Surprisingly gray outside.
Yeah. There's a nice little rain, a little tinkle in the air this morning. It was tinkling.
I did enjoy getting tinkled on.
Oh, speaking of tinkling, what a weird segue. Public restrooms, the use of sensors on the machine, like a toilet or a urinal that have sensors, soap dispenser with a sensor, and the sinks censored. And then air blow dryer or a paper towel dispensers that are censored. Perfect. But what's with the public restrooms that have one but not the other? The water's a sensor, but I still have to pump the soap, or the soap is censored, but I still have to turn the knob on, or the paper towel machines. We're not trained because there's so many variations.
It's true.
Like sometimes I'm standing in front of a paper towel dispenser holding my hands out like an idiot and I have to pull.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the sink and the soap are sensors. Why isn't this censored?
That makes sense. And
it makes sense.
You know, I hate those paper towels that you need two hands to pull it out, because sometimes they just want to dry one hand at a time.
And when the sensor ones, like the automatic ones, come out, like you see one that's already like out, right, for you to pull. And like I rip that one off to throw away because I don't know if someone's touched that already.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one comes out. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I keep thinking, no, stop making paper come out. And don't they say like the air blow dryer Dyson things aren't as effective as just like wiping your hands with a paper towel? Like, because it spreads more germs.
I think that like maybe even Mythbusters had an episode about that. But yeah, I think they create a false sense of sanitariness. They're not as clean as you think they are.
Think as clean as you are.
And yeah, I like a paper towel because it feels like I'm cleaning myself. But you're right. Also, the ones that are hanging out for who knows how long, even if somebody didn't touch them, they're like contracting poo particles.
Right.
That are just floating in the air.
And can we like start normalizing the bidet in this country? I know we've talked about this so many times.
I cannot agree more.
Can we have public restrooms with bidet, or is that unsanitary? I don't know. How would it be unless like people like pee and poo on the actual spray of the bidet, but if there's something that, you know, that I don't know.
My biggest concern with the bidet usage is that people would like turn it on when they're not using it and just squirt water everywhere.
All right, Steve, I have a Shark Tank pitch.
Okay.
All right. So we go to public restrooms in, you know, like malls or department stores, restaurants, all of them. Usually in a lot of restrooms, there might be multiple stalls. Like sometimes there's like the handicapable stall and then like two other stalls, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that case, maybe for women, it's like four. What if we rent out a stall in public restrooms, but it's a VIP exclusive stall where we charge people a monthly fee for our card that we send to them, and you have an app, or it's like an app, right? And mm-hmm. where every exclusive VIP stall is in restaurants or businesses, and we're paying like a rent for that space, so the business is getting money from us. And so when someone comes in, like let's say it's at a Taco Bell, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can go in and you flash your membership card to the exclusive toilet to Taco Bell, and they say yes, you can go in, and you scan, you know, it's like a key code that opens the urinal, and it's floor to ceiling, by the way, privacy.
Ooh, yeah.
It's a bidet. There's classical music playing. There'll be like mints. We'll have like a robot, like a butler that'll dry your hands. You know, like a nice sink, sprays, like perfumes and lotions. It's, you could even like a baby station or whatever.
The elite experience.
Yes. Bowel removal experience or urine removal experience.
Right.
So, you know how like we have like Uber drivers picking up people, mm-hmm. who have like an employee on hand when said, oh, the restroom in that Taco Bell was just used. So they have to go and wait for the person to come out. They'll make sure everything's sanitized for the next person.
Ooh, I like this.
Yeah.
Because like there's always that concept of like a bathroom attendant who like stands there with a towel while you wash your hands after you take a shit. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want that. Like, I don't want somebody to like,
we're not
going to
have that. Yeah. We're not.
Yeah.
And the person that's going to clean it isn't going to like wait till you're done and then go in there and clean. No, there's going to be a nice buffer zone.
Right. You'll never see the person.
Yeah, exactly.
I like this. Yeah.
And it's this kind of conversation that Steve and I would have when we used to hang out in bars. And because at bars, we're usually just like drinking beer. So that reminds me, Steve, we should probably get on with this week's and go to one of our favorite corners of this podcast.
You mean the Simpsons beer corner?
All right, Steve, what do you got for us this week?
This episode, you know, talks about people's brains and their how their brains function and the value within there. So it's kind of like an inspiring to the mind. So that's why I have Mindspire from Varietal Brewing. It is a rye English special bitter collab with Steeplejack Brewery. So this collaboration, rye extra special bitter with Steeplejack, features Washington-grown Baroness barley malt with a healthy dose of rye malt. The can is a little trippy, not very kid-friendly. It comes in at a easy drinking 5%. See here. Ooh, got a way darker than I was anticipating. Almost a brown color to it. Mm. A nice kind of copper head. Mm. Smells malty, a little yeasty.
That's the way I like those ales.
Oh, that's delightful. The maltiness really comes through. It feels like a much heavier beer than a 5%, but not in a bad way. It just kind of is full bodied. The rye malt adds a nice hint of spiciness to it. This is a great beer. I would love to have it in like a dark pub on like a Saturday afternoon where you're like, maybe you're going to a soccer match or to watch something. I don't know what people do.
Am I going to a soccer match alone? Or?
I mean, you're going to the bar, the pub to watch a soccer match, I guess I should say. Yeah. No, this is a solid beer.
It's called Football and Pub, Steve.
Sorry. This is a solid football and pub. No, it's just a really nice, pleasant beer. Good spice, good bold flavor, and easy drinking. So you can have a couple of them and just be fine. So yeah, solid beer. What have you got for us this week, Craig?
Is that going to be our new, instead of Netflix and chill, it's football and pub.
Football and pub.
It's nothing to do with Netflix and chill. It's just bros hanging out at the bar. Although in Portland, I think our biggest sports bar is the sports. Is it called Sports Bra?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The
female owned female sports bar where they play just female sporty on the TV. Yeah, I haven't been there. I heard, cool. I heard it's supposed to be pretty good.
Like, yeah, I'd like to check it out sometime.
Yeah. We're not bringing our wives, though.
No.
They can go to the boys bar. What's the boys bar? That'd be like Buffalo Wild Wings, right? That's where the boys hang out.
The boys, that's where they drink.
Burns in this episode kind of wants to rule everybody. He wants to build this arc and lord over everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I went with Widmer Brothers, who are known for their Hefeweizen, right?
Yeah.
Have a Imperial Hef.
Oh.
An Imperial Wheat. And it says, the Imperial Wheat lords over ales with robust flavors, all while remaining true to its wheat sovereignty by tasting smooth, balanced, and bright, just like Mr. Burns.
Mm-hmm.
There's some tropical aromas, a bold wheat, and a smooth finish. Steve, we got 8% alcohol with 40 IBUs. So even the IBUs are a little bit higher than your typical Hef. It doesn't say if, you know, with Widmer Hefeweizen, you put the lemon slice in there. This one, I don't see a lemon in the can. Or, you know, like, I don't think I'm going to have a lemon in it. It's got to try it as is, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a little bit of an amber color to it. You really do get the weediness. Smells like a little bit. It probably smells like maybe like yours, but
yeah, it's funny that Widmer, like they for the longest time, you know, they put Hefeweizens on the map in America, but we haven't heard a lot from them. So it's fun to see them innovate with a new kind of version of their classic.
I get the syrupiness of it. You know, you get that wheat aftertaste, or nothing bitter about it. Because when I think of Windbeer Hefeweizen, it's one of like the go-to like summer thirst quenching beers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially we get the pint glass with the lemon slice on it. It's a great summer ale. This one I think would lean more towards the fall or winter for me. Like I would transition to this. I like it, but I don't know if I could do more than like two.
I think it's fair.
The thing with like Windbeer Hefeweizen, it's such a great beer. It, like I say, it is a classic. It's like the Coca-Cola of American Hefeweizens. And those I could drink a couple of those, but also it's like drinking a loaf of bread and five bagels.
Yeah.
Because you get so full and bloated afterwards. This one, I don't know. There's something smoother about it. Like, it's a good sipping one. So I think you might like this one, Steve.
Okay.
And you could pick it up. And since Windmere probably goes all over the country, I think our listeners could probably check it out. The can is a nice, it's a reverse of like their can. It's usually kind of like a gold can, right? With white and black writing on it. This one is a black can with some gold flourishes. There's a lion or and like a castle and a crown. And it's imperial, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would get it again, but it's not like on my like must go to has.
Interesting.
Very good, Steve. I
wish that Coca-Cola came in 8%.
caffeine or sugar?
Booze.
You know, I see those like Jack Daniels has like the bottled Jack and Coke like drinks. Did I do one of those? I think I did one of those for this podcast.
You did a while back, yeah.
Yeah. They have so many other flavors too. I want to see Old Crow and RC Cola team up to make their own like versions of the Jack and Coke in the pre-mixed cocktails. Old Crow RC, be like Old RC Crows or R Crows. That'd be great.
I mean, I'd give it a try. It sounds not horrible.
And I love RC Cola because it's the only options at bars. Is like, can I have a Coke? Yeah, it's RC Cola, guys. It's a lot cheaper.
It's Royal Crown. It's fancy.
It is. All right, Steve. Well, let's just get on with this week's episode. We've been blabbing on too long. It's time to blab on more about The Simpsons. So let's go all the way back to January 14th, 2018. Steve, what's the number one movie in the box office?
Well, Craig, we have Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
The hit sequel of Jumanji, the first one. Well, technically not the first one. It's the second one. It's a pseudo sequel to the Robin Williams movie from the 90s.
That's right. I know it's well received because we had a fun cast of like Jack Black and The Rock and Felicia Day. And
Karen Gillian.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Sorry. Nerd friendly redheads all look alike to me.
Oh, man. That's racist, Steve. Conan O'Brien, Tilda Swinton. No, these Jumanji movies are pretty fun.
Yeah, they look like a good time because I like the kind of Avatar aspect they have. Not talking about like the blue people, but the way that they're like, you know.
And you can't go wrong with like Jack Black. Like his Avatar is like a teenage girl, and him playing as a teenage girl is very funny. And I think the sequel had Danny DeVito and Danny Glover in it.
That's fun.
And I forget who plays them. I think they're in the game. So I think it's Kevin Hart and The Rock are Danny DeVito and The Rock, I think, is trying to be Danny DeVito's character. And Kevin Hart is supposed to be Danny Glover. Anyways, but yeah, they're fun movies.
Craig, when we were all watching Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, we weren't listening to Guns N' Roses, but what were we listening to?
Pretty much like the same genre as Guns N' Roses. We were listening to Ed Sheeran and the song Perfect, which I believe was written for us. I found a love for me. Darling, just dive right in. Follow my lead. I found a girl, beautiful and sweet. Well, I never knew you were the someone waiting for me. 'Cause we were just kids when we fell in love. All right, I'm going to pause it there because Steve's crying.
Yeah, this is so powerful.
This obviously is a song about his wife. Weren't they like high school sweethearts or something like that?
Sure.
I think something like that. Or maybe he's writing this about Taylor Swift. I don't know. But this is definitely like, I'm going to write this song and it's going to be played at every wedding from now on.
Yeah, it's probably even like somebody's like prom song.
Oh, yeah. Move over, Cool in the Gang. Celebration is out, which which is good. I don't want to hear Celebration ever again, unless it's on this podcast when we play that clip.
But I love Cool and the Gang, and I hate that song.
Oh, it's the worst. Like, there's definitely bands out there that we love, but there's like that one song that we just, not a good song. That's a discussion for a different day. Maybe you and your friends can sit around at the bar and discuss what's the song from a favorite artist that you hate, but you just love the rest of their catalog. We'll talk about that off the air. Steve, another fun conversation. Ed Sheeran, people like him. That's all I have to say.
That is true. People do like him.
And he's done nothing wrong to us, so I have nothing against the man.
Yeah, he's fine, I think.
Okay. Well, Steve, let's just get on with this week's episode. Finally, everyone's like, finally, Jesus.
Yay.
I suck. Let's continue this. Steve, we're going to watch an episode that's called Frink Gets Testy, in which Mr. Burns believes that the end of the world is nigh and enlists Dr. Frink's help in determining which residents of Springfield are worth saving. The Simpsons are deeply displeased with results.
Huh.
All right, Steve, let's drink our perfect beers and listen to our perfect songs from Ed Sheeran. And watch a perfect episode of The Simpsons?
Perhaps.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll be right back.
Oh, my love.
Lisa, turn off that oldie station.
And we're back. Today we're talking about Frink Gets Testy. It's the 11th episode of the 29th season, originally aired January 14th, 2018. It's episode 629 on the show's run. Your nerd code is XABF04, written by Dan Weber, directed by Chris Clements, and your showrunner is Al Jean.
Dan Weber is an American writer. He's worked on shows such as The Simpsons, Space Ghost Coast to Coast, Futurama, Daria, the Napoleon Dynamite cartoon, and American Dad. Also a writer on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's written 9 episodes of The Simpsons, and this is our 5th one. We also did Lisa the Veterinarian, Thanksgiving of Horror, The Last Barfighter, and Boys in the Highland.
Wow, so only a couple more episodes, and then no more Weber for us.
No more Weber.
Is he still writing for the show, or...
It seems like he hasn't since 2022, but maybe he'll return.
That was like the last season, I think, in our time.
Yeah, but that seems like so long ago.
Boys in the Highlands, that was a fun episode from season 3.
That was fun, yeah.
Yeah, so we haven't done Step Brother from the Same Planet, Bart the Bad Guy. We didn't do Bart the Bad Guy season 33? I thought we did all season 33.
Oh, wait, we did.
Yeah.
Somebody's wrong, and that somebody is me.
That's Steve. Oh, we can't edit this out. We were already too clean. And two,
so
perfect.
Yeah, we've reviewed 7 of the.
There you go.
call us Deep Space Nine because we reviewed 7 of the 9 episodes that we've reviewed.
That 7 of 9 was from Voyager, not Deep Space Nine.
Jeez, fuck. I cannot catch a break today. Now let's get back to our view of the Family Guy.
He's a Family Guy.
Dan Weber, I think we always bring it up. There's like, was it just the one episode of Buffy? It was the Zeppo. Is that the one he wrote?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, good episode. Even though Xander is my least favorite character from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Me too.
Steve can't get Simpsons references or Star Trek references, so I'm going to try to get him a reference on Buffy, which he maybe saw 15 years ago, like a season.
I think I saw like 3 seasons, and it was, about 15 years ago.
All right, Steve, can you name the 4 main characters, the Scooby Gang, the 4 characters?
Buffy.
Right.
Willow.
Correct.
Xander.
Yeah, I just said his name.
And Giles.
There you go. There's the basic 4.
Yeah.
All right. Now, tell me what color bandanas they wear over their eyes and what their thing is.
See, Buffy's cool but rude.
She's cool.
Giles does machines.
No. Yeah, so I'm trying to the turtles were Buffy. Buffy's Leonardo. That's obvious because he's the leader. Mm-hmm. Michelangelo, I think, would be Xander. Willow would have been Donatello.
She's
a smart one. But I don't see Giles as a Raph. Maybe if we're talking the later seasons, Spike. Spike would be Raph. Only Buffy fans, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. That makes sense.
All right. April O'Neil would have been I don't know. Well, Splinter. Splinter would be Giles.
Yeah, for sure.
That makes sense. Okay. All right. Well, you know, like the first 3 seasons, you had Cordelia, who was like the same age as the kids, but she was kind of like the, she would have been Raphael. All right. Was there ever a love interest for Leonardo, the turtles? I guess Angel then would be April O'Neil.
Yeah.
Okay. No, Angel would have been Casey Jones. There we go.
And, oh, the tracks. Yeah.
April O'Neil. Huh. The only female character from Turtles. And I can't think of a female equivalent to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is a predominant female cast.
I feel like in the later seasons of the cartoon, they introduced a female turtle.
That was the next mutation, the live action.
Okay.
Yeah. Venus de Milo, I think that was her name.
Which is kind of shitty to name her after a piece of art. Literally an object.
Piece of hot ass art.
Have you ever tried to get a hand job from Venus de Milo? Not happening.
I got to get a handy.
I think her color, her headband eye mask was like a light blue. So you had Leonardo with blue and mm-hmm. Venus de Milo with light blue. I'm like, couldn't you? I know it'd be too obvious if she had pink, you know, because she's a girl. And so I'm glad they didn't do that. But like, I don't know. Is there another color?
She could have had like teal.
Well, purple was Donatello, Steve.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, you couldn't do green unless it was like a dark green.
I think green would be a bad idea just because it would like mesh.
Yeah.
It would blend in even if it was a different color green.
How about white?
That would work.
Yeah. White to signify she's pure. Virginal.
Virginal.
Well, we're really, we've got Buffy, Turtles. is it time we talk about The Simpsons now?
I guess so.
All right. No more dirty talk, okay?
All right. Sorry. All right. No more dirty talk from here on out.
Okay. Steve, is there a title gag?
There is. It's Agnes, Lamb of God Skinner, flying across the screen as a pterodactyl.
Cool. I'm going to recreate that with my toy right now. I have my Agnes dolly right here.
Very nice.
Whee! She's flying. Yeah, I just now noticed something. I'm looking up the, hey, Simpsons fans out there. You got an Agnes Lamb of God, what were they, the Playmates figures from the early 2000s?
Mm-hmm.
From 2004, yeah. Agnes goes commando, and she shaves. Wow. See here, I'll send you a picture.
Oh, boy.
I don't know why I have to send you a picture. I mean, we're sitting in the same room together. So here, I'm just going to pass it over to you real quick. Look up Agnes's dress there. Here you go.
Okay. All right, caramba. That Skinner's a lucky man.
That's her son.
Comic book guy and Super Nintendo Tremors for an episode or two are lucky men.
Oh, look, she's got that little chip on her shoe so she can say words.
Mm-hmm.
Do all of them have those?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they work with any playset.
You have a couple of the playsets, right?
Yeah.
I'll have to bring my Commando Agnes over so we can have a play date.
I've got the retirement castle, and I think I've got the, I know I've got the radio booth. I might have one more.
They just say things that are programmed in the chip from the toy. They don't like specific ones like she'll
say.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. Enough of playing with toys, Steve. hey, there's a billboard gag.
Oh?
Yeah. It's Moe's Tavern, now with a ladies' room. That's nice.
Very nice.
Is it up on the roof?
Probably.
On the ladder? Yeah.
We got a chalkboard gag that says, strangling is not an effective parenting tool, written by Homer, which is a nice change of pace. So I was going to see if this was like relevant to any particular timeline, if like they had declared to stop doing it at this point, and they didn't. What I did like is that I just Googled strangling is not an effective parenting tool. And the first two hit results are from parenting magazines that say that hitting your kid is not great.
It's not great. It's fine, but not great.
Right. Okay. It's not an effective parenting tool. They're not saying don't do it. They're saying it doesn't work.
I mean, look at us. Apparently it didn't work. Don't hit your kids, guys, or strangle them. Come on. Hey, Steve, we do have a couch gag, though. And it's Dr. Hibbert assisting the couch, giving birth to a baby couch. I didn't know that's how couches were brought into existence. Aww. Yeah. So the newborn furniture is given to Homer, who drops it after, you know, bragging about how knowing how to hold it. And then a cute little Maggie there sits on the little couch. Very cute scene.
So I got to wonder, who would that couch be fucking?
It's another brown couch, apparently.
Yeah.
Unless, hear me out.
I think I'm out of you.
I'm thinking Homer, fuck the couch. That's why he's the first to hold the baby. That's his baby. That's him and the couch's baby. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I guess Homer. Any seat could be a love seat.
Homer, stop fucking couches.
Yeah.
Let's get on with the episode. And it begins, as it always does, with the Simpsons sitting in the living room watching TV. Marge knits. Maggie and Snowball 2 take turns on the baby walker. And Lisa reads The Girl with a Rub-On Tattoo. As TLN, the Learning Network, features Apocalypse Week with exciting offerings such as...
Ebola Meter.
Nukes of Hazard.
Jesus Christ Superstorm.
But before all that, we have a special on Nostradamus, the man who saw the future, as presented by an iconic director in this clip.
The following film, made in 1982, was thought to be lost forever. Actually, it was misplaced in a box for the comedy Dr. Detroit. But its predictions are more terrifying than ever. Hello, I'm Orson Welles, director of Citizen Kane.
Boring!
As well as the lower left-hand square on Hollywood Squares.
Ooh, right next to Ruth Buzzy.
In 1555, the prophet Nostradamus foretold a terrifying series of predictions, all of which came to pass. First, his own death. Second, large wars in Europe, similar to the large wars he observed in Europe, and the breakup of Fleetwood Mac. But Nostradamus's final quatrain contained one more prediction yet to come. That shortly after the Antichrist becomes president,
a flaming mushroom spreads across the sky.
The champagne is terrible. It tastes like dryer sheets.
That's a famed actor and best known for Futurama and many other things. Maurice LaMarche playing Orson Welles.
It's his brain from Peaky and the Brain.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you need an Orson Welles sounding character, you go to Maurice LaMarche.
I will always remember his performance on The Critic as Orson Welles doing a commercial for Rosebud brand peas.
Let's see if we can find that and play it for the fans.
Rosebud. Yes, Rosebud frozen peas, full of country goodness and green penis. Wait, that's terrible. I quit. Just a handful for the road. Oh, what luck. There's a French fry stuck in my beard. Oh, yeah.
Rosebud. Good stuff.
That sound clip lives in my head like a song. Like, it just, beautiful.
And I feel like we've played that clip on this podcast before.
I'm sure we have.
Green penis.
That clip also mentions... that clip also mentions the movie Dr. Detroit, which is a 1983 American comedy film starring Dan Aykroyd, Howard Hessman, and Fran Drescher. Go Fran, president of the WGA. It was the first film Aykroyd made after John Belushi passed away, and it's the first one that he's not the top bill. It's also kind of, I've never actually seen it, but I know it's fairly maligned as a film. The plot goes that a pimp, played by Howard Hessman, on the run, trusts his call girls to a meek professor of literature, played by Dan Aykroyd, who accepts the challenge. Have you ever seen Dr. Detroit, Craig?
No, it's one of the few I haven't seen of Aykroyd. Wasn't Donna Dixon? That's where he met, because they got married. Donna Dixon, yeah.
They soon got married after the film's release. So yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I went to look up if this is streaming anywhere, and it's not.
Hmm.
So there might be other means to get this movie. If you maybe, I don't know.
Sure.
Sail the seas into a bay. Does Pirate Bay even exist anymore? I have no idea.
I don't think so. I don't think it's 2012. I think
I wonder if Dr. Detroit is even on, like, maybe YouTube.
I can see that.
I don't see it. There's clips, and I think this would be a great movie for Steve and I to watch on our hit Patreon that hasn't existed yet.
Yeah, I think that with the strike happening, we should do a full dive into the film career of Fran Drescher. So we can watch Spinal Tap, Dr. Detroit, the one that she made with Tim Allen.
There's UHF.
Oh, yeah, UHF. Yeah.
Beautician and the Beast with James Bond himself, Timothy Dalton.
Mm-hmm. See, there we go. There's five films right there. That's that's a great month of Patreon. Brantober.
Brantober. All right, well, now we got our October. Usually in October, you'd want to do like a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
No, we've already kind of discussed if we ever do the Patreon, we're going to focus on the creatives and the talents from The Simpsons and focus on their other movies. So have the Wheel of Random pick for us. Like, for instance, we get to watch Mystery Men. You know, that'd be a movie we get to watch. I haven't seen that in years because Hank Azaria's in that. Spinal Tap, we could watch Spinal Tap because Harry Shearer's in that.
Right.
I hope he's in Beautician of the Beast because I never saw that one. It was UHF. Is there any Simpsons people in that? Well, Weird Al did a voice on The Simpsons. Does that count? Can we do that? I don't think that counts.
No, I mean, he's been...
It's got to be creatives or cast members from The Simpsons. But we could watch Mission Hill. Bill Oakley used to show run and write on The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah. That's a great show, too. I love that show.
Most of our Patreon is going to be something related to The Simpsons. Well, there's going to be a connection. You know, it's like the 6 degrees of separation.
Mm-hmm.
So we pretty much can watch anything on the Patreon is what I'm trying to say. The Simpsons has touched everything, even our hearts. But yeah, Dr. Detroit, let's watch it, Steve. Let's just
all right.
Take a break and come back. We'll do an episode of that. I bet there's going to be like problematic things in it, like jokes that don't land well and are probably like offensive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to watch this movie, Steve.
Yeah,
I'll let you know next week what I think about it. You know, making fun of like the Learning Channel, like when we were kids on cable, TLC was actually like educational TV.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not.
It's all like these reality TV. And
yeah, did I Nostradamus? I that was such like a name as kids too, like hearing about him, like what? Whoa, he's so cool. But like some of the jokes they make, you know, coming up, but like he predicted more wars in Europe because of previous wars in Europe
and his own death. Like, yeah, you're gonna die.
I'm predicting I'm gonna die in no more than 50 years.
That's yeah,
and no less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, is that a good?
I think so.
I mean, 50 years. How old am I? Yeah, that's not bad. I could go when I'm 9. As long as I like have. I don't know if bidets are around, so I could wipe myself. That's fine. Well, Steve will be cleaning out my bedpans when we're in the podcaster's retirement home.
Oh yeah, that's fine. The retirement castle for podcasters.
Yeah,
it'll be next to Mark Maron, always telling us to lock the gates.
Mark Maron is still alive in our reality.
Yeah, but he's very old and retired.
The Godfather podcast, Conan O'Brien will be there.
Sure, Sarah Canning will be like trying to figure out who stole her muffin.
Hey. Maybe Yardley will be there with, you know, because she just got her podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be like, let's talk Simpsons. And she's like, no, I got to record the 85th season. All right. Here we go, Steve. We're off to the races.
All righty. So the famed director and voice of Optimus Prime in the 1984 film goes on to say that the mushroom signifies that nothing less than World War III is about to occur. Lisa wonders who would fall for such malarkey, and we find C. Montgomery Burns sitting in his bed, blanket up to his chin, frightened. He tells Smithers to release the comforting hounds, and three English sheepdogs hop on the bed. Burns is pleased and tells Smithers to turn those dogs into rugs.
Aww. I mean, they do like to murder animals for pleasure and having like clothing and decorations.
Right, right.
So it makes sense. It's on brand.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Burns continues his show where Orson Welles states that anyone left alive will find themselves envying. Burns presses pause on his TiVo to ponder who they could possibly envy. And then he learns it's the dead.
Whoa.
Seeing that the end is near, Burns begins to prepare by rounding up the greatest minds of Springfield. And Smithers asks if he should order pizza, and Burns kind of hesitates and is like, fine. Just one large cheese, but double cut. Was that like...
bastard.
Yeah. When we worked at the pizza place, like we'd have to double cut pizzas all the time. I mean, I guess it's for like kids. Like, well, I have 10 kids over. If I just have these double cut, they won't notice.
And then there's a whole trend on TikTok where pizza people would be slicing their pizza, and they basically just slice a strip down the middle and take that strip and then push the two halves together.
I don't understand. What was the point of that?
So you imagine a pizza, it's round.
Yeah.
And then you slice
some sauce, some cheese, maybe some pepperonis.
You got it. But then you take a strip of pizza down the middle and you slice it out, like maybe half an inch of slice, but all the way through the circumference of the pizza. And you take that out and you eat it. And then you push the two slices together, the remaining two slices. So you're basically taking like a strip of it from the middle of the pizza.
Why can't the pizza person just make their own pizza and eat it?
I don't know, because that doesn't make for good content, I guess.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. God, if we were still working in the pizza place or like at that age and TikTok was around.
Oh, God. Yeah.
All this stupid stuff we might have done. I'm still not down with the Tic Tacs. That's fine.
I don't believe you. It's awful. They got this media new thing where it's basically people pretending to be NPCs. It's awful. Don't even look it up. It's just awful. Anyway. So that pizza that is double cut is enjoyed by the members of Mensa, where if you think it's an acronym, you're not in Mensa. So let's see. Mensa.
Yeah, what would if we made our own acronyms? What I think here? How about many educated nerds seeking admiration?
Mental efforts, not social ability.
Masculine, enormous nerds. I just like nerds sucking ass.
Menstruating elephants need some aspirin.
Marge enjoys Ned's
sausage. All right.
Sausage. All right. I was, you know, you gotta get like a Marge enjoys Ned's scrumptious
anus.
I was gonna say abs.
Oh yeah, that makes more sense.
Aforementioned hog. What's another word for penis that starts with an A? There's got to be one, right?
Yeah.
Asp. You know, it's like a snake. I don't know.
Right, right. Anyway, so Sideshow Mel leads the group of mental heavyweights such as Dr. Hibbert, Manjula Nahasapita Petalon, Comic Book Guy, and Lindsay Nagel. They've gathered to solve an unknown problem of global importance. But before all of that, Mel suggests that they play triominoes, which are 1.5 times the fun of regular dominoes. And I know that because my dad loved triominoes. Dr. Hibbert would rather write and solve acrostics, while Comic Book Guy wants to recite all of the words in the Declaration of Independence in alphabetic order. And while they're working on that, Mr. Burns arrives to inform the geniuses of the problem at hand.
Silence, you thinkertons. I summoned you here because the world is about to end.
No, it isn't. What are you afraid of? Global warming? AI? Some sort of plague?
The smarty pantaloons, I am asking you to help with the Montgomery Burns Doomsday Arc. This space vehicle will lead humanity's best and brightest to a better life under my stern rule.
Good heaven!
Will there be someone for your more personal needs?
Concubines. Many concubines.
I'll work my way in.
I need you to tell me who is worthy of surviving the apocalypse with me. I only want the sharpest razors in this town's Halloween candy.
Oh, don't worry, Mr. Burns. This is what Mensa does best. Make everyone else feel stupid.
So they were putting the Declaration of Independence in alphabetical order. I think that would be a fun thing to do. Let's do the... let's like do a song. Let's do a... Let's do Tequila. Let's put all the lyrics in alphabetical order, okay?
Okay.
Oh, that's D, so there's no A, B, or C, okay?
Okay, so I'm on musicmatch.com.
Okay.
And let's see here. So it says Tequila.
Okay, that's T. That's pretty low in the alphabet there.
Yeah, but then that's followed by Tequila.
That's, I'm going to say that's the 19th letter of the alphabet. Is that right?
I do believe you're correct, yeah.
No, maybe 20th?
Maybe it's 20, because, yeah, I think S is 19.
All right, so Tequila. We did it.
Yeah, I think it was pretty funny of Dr. Hibbert to be like, oh, what are you worried about? Global warming? AI? Some kind of plague?
This is 2018.
Yeah.
And we're like 2 years shy from good old COVID 19, you know, the fake virus.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was weird. Like the Simpsons predicted it. They knew something shady was going down. And this is like a call and response too, because like when they said a world leader, you know, with the Nostradamus thing, like kind of implying the Trump presidency. So they would have done this episode in like 2017, maybe in late 2016. So, and we all knew the plague.
And they're even talking about AI.
And that's what we're talking about now in this
moment. Right.
Global warming, which, you know, climate, this has been going on since like the 70s, late 60s, 70s, right. Talking about climate change.
But what Arizona had recently 3 days in a row that were over 115 degrees.
Yeah. Steve and I went to Death Valley to go running a 5K in 140 degree weather. It was great.
Yeah. Name is a little deceptive, though. It's clearly a Glen.
Yeah. That's kind of like a Simpsons joke.
In that it has words.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Monster Island.
Right, right. That's kinda...
Yeah, yeah. But here we are, Steve, with the Mensa group. Sideshow Mel then tries to make everyone feel stupid by asking for the only word in English with three consecutive double letters. Comic Book Guy tries gooseberry and coffee-o and ballooning. Ballooning. But as we all know, it's bookkeeper. Lindsay Nagel suggests they give all the Springfield residents an IQ test, and the highest scores, along with the grandfathered in Mensa members, will be allowed on the Ark. Everyone seems keen on the idea. Everyone, that is, except Professor Frink. Hey, he's the title of this episode.
That's right, because he states that IQ tests are meaningless, and he's not wrong. The Mensa members gasp in shock as someone throws a deluxe Rubik's Cube at Frink's head. The professor goes on to say that he has a test that measures something far more significant. And with that, somebody throws triominoes at Frink. But his test overrates the overall worth as a human. But Lindsay feels that intelligence is the only quotient that tells you how important you are. Just ask anyone who did well on a test when they were six.
I think this whole scene's pretty great in the state that they're trying to make, and, you know, IQ tests. And we're on off to an interesting concept of an episode, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I peaked at age six when I got a smiley face on my spelling test.
Yeah, that's as good as I'll ever do.
I was able to spell cat, red, and dog.
You cheated, though, because you brought a copy of Clipper the Big Red Dog.
Yeah. Frank tells his fellow Mensa mates that they may be the brightest, but that doesn't make them the best. That's true. Now, the worthiness of a human being is best measured, according to Frank, by the personal value quotient, or the PVQ. The Mensa folk then throw more items at Frank, like a king from a chess set, the bust of Ludwig von Beethoven, a copy of the New York Times Book Review, a globe of the moon, and a compass which pierces Professor Frink's neck. Frink vows to make his presentation entertaining as he breaks into song, counting with the one, a two, and a digits of pi, which is 3.14567856542375642881002518800 mattress.
That's right.
I got like 3.15, and then I don't know. It's like 3.1. I don't. Who cares?
3.14159. That's about as far as I can go.
All right. So I probably said that.
Yeah, you're fine.
Good at me. I'm not reading that often, thing. So here's the clip.
Forgive me if it seems like I'm attacking, but I find the old IQ test badly lacking. If you want to find out just what someone can do, you need to learn that subject's PVQ. It tests for sympathy and empathy and group collaboration, artistry and neatness and complex socialization, and every single aspect of a personality. Hey, PVQ, is A-OK with me? It tests for sarcasm and prudence, not if you're Isaac Newton. Confidence, ambition, and the teams for whom you're rooting.
So it's all the little foibles that can make a person whole.
Trust the PVQ, the yardstick for the soul.
So, like, Hank Azaria probably pissed Dan Weber off, or maybe some of the Simpsons writers off. And you're like, you know what? We're going to make you sing as Frink in an episode.
Yeah.
That's probably not an easy thing for him to do.
No, I mean, I don't know, but I imagine that's like one of the harder voices that he does.
Yeah.
Just because it is so high and nasally, and he has to like emote with the random like Jerry Lewisisms, like the Glavins and whatnot. And so, yeah, singing like that has to be difficult. So, yeah, I think Weber's, you know, like saw an episode of Brockmire. He's like, man, this guy sucks.
Did you ever watch Brockmire?
I think I watched the first episode.
I think I did too. It's probably something that I'd enjoy, but I just, you know,
yeah,
if it doesn't get me, you know, right in the first episode, then like usually at a TV show, like the first episode, it has to kind of get me intrigued. And this all works. And then after episode three, if I'm not like addicted, then what's the point?
Right.
What is the point, Steve?
I don't know what the point of anything is anymore.
Yeah, man.
I feel like if Brockmire had come out like in 2006, when there wasn't such a glut of like all the good shows, I would have loved it. But there's just so many shows, especially even at this time when that came out, that I was just like, I can't watch another show.
But now it's even worse because there's too many shows and too many streaming services. And we just won't have time for The Simpsons, I guess.
Nope.
I love the song and dance number. It kind of starts off reminding me of a little bit of maybe like By Fair Lady, Ordinary Man. Is that the song? Yeah. And I'm just an ordinary man. Yeah, it kind of starts off like that. I mean, very song and dance. And I love the, I know it's a cartoon, but when they put in human like live action mistakes, it's very funny when he goes behind the like the beam in the room.
Yeah.
And he's clearly, you can still see him, his arm. And then like the muscular like acrobat stunt Frink.
The very obvious wig.
Yeah. And then even like when that, when the Professor Frink body double like is behind the couch, you see his body. I'm kind of disappointed we didn't see actual Frink like crawling behind Minjula and the guy. Like that would have sold it for me too. Like that would have been funny if they just animated a little bit of that. But yeah, you know, he continues the song singing that when Mensa members are smart, emotional intelligence is needed for the arc. And after one quick wardrobe change into gold tuxedo, the Mensa folks, now which includes Smithers for some reason. I mean, I consider Smithers pretty smart, so he can be a Mensa.
Yeah, he's pretty smart.
And they switch to like some gold bathing suits and hop in the pool. And then they join in the song, singing about the importance of earnestness and ego, one's ability to make a mean burrito, not to mention the social grace to win, not to wear a Speedo. So, Steve, I don't know why you came to this record wearing a Speedo.
I thought it would, you know, I thought it'd be cozy. I thought it was like casual Friday, even though it's a Monday. But
is that a burrito in your Speedo?
I'm just happy to see you.
Okay. Why is it leaking fire sauce from Taco Bell?
Oh, that's not fire sauce. I have several medical problems.
It's a Diablo sauce.
That's right.
Before the song and dance, right? I noticed a little fun visual gag. A couple ones. There was that, you know, he's going through all the famous arts, works of art on the laptop. There's mm-hmm. the one with the statue of the Virgin Mary and...
Yeah, and Jesus, which we referenced a few episodes ago.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was talking about the dogs playing poker, that famous one with Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a, there has to be like a parody of the, of other religious figures playing poker, like Jesus and, oh, not Muhammad, that'd be against the Islamic religion, but like, you know, Buddha and whatever the Canadians worship.
Tim Horton.
Tim Horton or a hockey stick, yeah. Oh, those crazy Canucks. That, and then, like, when, I think it's when Frink comes in through to the Mensa headquarters, like, the hallway is a dungeon with, like, three skeletons hanging up.
Yeah.
Like, who were those people for Burns? Were those, like, former employees that he just put in a dungeon?
I think maybe.
Or is that meant to be, like, former Mensa members that weren't smart enough and they had to go to the dungeon? Steve's
maybe they just
pondering, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they just failed the test.
Okay.
After Frink wraps up his medley, Burns asks if anyone else has a rebuttal song, but no one is interested in Sideshow Mel's tune. So Burns will use Frink's PBQ test to find out who is worthy to sit on his ark, which he imagines as kind of like a slave ship where he'll whip the passengers to power the ship. Smithers wonders how they'll get everyone in town to take a test without telling them what it's all about. But we then cut to the Springfield Convention Center, where the Springfield Police Department have wrangled residents with their billy clubs to a mandatory citywide test. Wiggum, outside the convention center, rings a bell saying that the test is mandatory for everyone not ringing a bell. Meanwhile, Lenny and Carl seem optimistic about the exam.
What's the point of this test again?
The way I look at it, the more things secret corporations know about us, the better, huh?
I like when drones show up bringing me things I needed but didn't know. Wow, I am out of deodorant.
We all knew.
Remove all stray marks. Number two pencil only. And for God's sake, relax!
This question asked about the price of underwear as if I were some landed aristocrat.
You know, he's Scottish. Scottish people wear kilts, and you're not supposed to wear mm-hmm. underwear with kilts. So, I mean, that makes sense, right?
True. And playing the proctor of the test, that's Valerie Harper, star of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Rhoda, and the first two seasons of Valerie, which is also known as Valerie's Family, the Hogans, and most notably, the Hogan Family, starring Sandy Duncan and not Valerie Harper.
R.I.P. Valerie Harper. She died a few years ago, right?
Yeah, died in 2019, just a few months after this episode aired. About a year and a half after this episode.
Didn't she just want like a raise?
Yeah.
For Valerie's family or the Hogan family?
Right.
And they're just like, fuck you.
And it's funny too, because at the time she was demonized by pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
And then became kind of a butt of the joke. But in reality, she probably wasn't asking for anything that unreasonable because the show was gaining popularity.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like the only star from the show. Like Jason Bateman wasn't anybody yet. The husband wasn't anybody of note, really.
Yeah.
So she was the star power of the show. So for her wanting more money for a fairly successful NBC sitcom, it doesn't seem that unreasonable.
Do you think that, you know, this is about 30 years after this happened, and about 30 years from now, do you think people are going to finally realize that maybe we were a little too harsh with the reboot of Roseanne, and maybe she should have stayed on and they not kill her off on the Conners?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, she did have some pretty good ideas.
Steve and I have watched her comedy special countless times on the Fox News app. It's great.
Mm-hmm. You know that her pronouns are kiss my ass? Isn't that funny and original?
Yeah. Oh, Roseanne. Anyways, Jimbo Jones then asks if he can copy off Willie's paper, and then does so by even writing Groundskeeper Willie in a spot where his own name should go, right? Milhouse, meanwhile, correctly figures out an analogy. Day is tonight, as early as too late.
Hmm.
After shouting, booyah, his nose then begins to bleed. Aww. So then he breaks off the eraser from the pencil and stuffs it in his nostril. Feeling proud of himself, he once again says, booyah, causing yet the other nostril to bleed. He then stops that with a scrap of paper, another booyah, and then his ear starts to bleed. And then Milhouse regrets to bring his testy earmuffs. So I was kind of hoping maybe the scene, like, he kept stuffing his ears and then like the nose, the ears, and all of a sudden they start coming out of the eyes.
Yeah.
is that morbid?
I think it'd be funny, but yeah, it would be a little morbid.
There's also, speaking of Mill House, I forgot to bring it up in the musical number, going back to that again, when they're showing all like the images of like art, there's also, it starts off with Mill House handing Martin, who's hung up on a fence with his underwear, he's handing him a juice box. Like, doesn't mm-hmm. Martin need to be helped down and not have a juice box?
Right. It's like, I'm being nice, but I'm not being helpful.
Yeah. Ah, is that... That's a Mensa thinking there, Steve.
Yeah, it's
nice, know. But are you helping? I think that could be a shirt.
Oh yeah, actually, yeah, just an image of Milhouse offering him the juice box and like, are you being nice? Are you helping?
And then on the back it says, "Eat, pray, love." I don't know.
I like it,
Steve. You never used testing your must, did you?
No.
Okay. Well, 6 weeks later, the results are in, and the residents of Springfield receive the information in the most logical manner, of course, from Kent Brockman on Choose 6. Kent, take it away.
The results are in. The newest and most accurate measure of our intelligence on a scale from 1 to 500. 500 being best.
Boring.
Don't shut it off. I need my score.
Thank you.
Now we'll run everyone's scores past the screen really fast from best to worst, trusting that you'll pause at only your name.
Pause it! 475. My sweet spot. Excellent, but room to improve.
What? I am one below Ralph? Ralph.
I mean, it doesn't mean Ralph's smarter than you. It just means he's a more valuable person.
Ralph.
Keep scrolling. Ooh, 311. Above average, but not enough to make people mad. And it's the number you call to complain about potholes.
Ooh! H. Simpson, 265. Exactly the number of days in a year.
Well, that's good. Let's change the channel.
But we don't know your score.
So Marge's score is also the score of her favorite band, 311.
Oh.
Yeah, she loves 311 and that one song that they sang when they had that cruise.
Is that with the Kryptonite? Did they do Kryptonite?
That's Three Doors Down.
Oh.
It's not Crazy Town either.
Okay.
As like looking on the scrolls of the show, or like when they're showing the scores.
Steve, you're watching the wrong show if you're trying to find the scrolls. That's a Secret Invasion.
Oh, yeah.
The wrong Disney Plus show.
I get confused. They both have shiny colors. But if you look closely, as it's kind of going crazy, you can't see any scores, but you can see the outlines of names. Like, I'm looking here, and I can see definitely Carl Carlson, Lenny Leonard, Lionel Hutz is there, Cletus Buckler. It's just interesting that they went to the trouble of, like, you can barely make it out, but some of the names are there. Like
there's, some of them aren't.
There's a Bouvier. Anyway, fun stuff. So after some scrolling, Marge gasps with dismay and arrives on what she was looking for. The screen shows B. Simpson with a score of 001.
Or, you know, it could be, you know, part of the British spy agency. 001. Oh, yeah.
001. That's
probably better than 007, right?
Sounds like it's six better than
yeah,
Mr. Bond. But the word loser flashes red above the name. Marge begins to sob, but Bart feels he doesn't need any test. He's street smart. He then runs to the street where Nelson runs him over with a bike.
I actually like blurted out laughing at that scene.
Yeah, yeah.
When he just gets hit with a bike. It was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, violence is funny, so.
And it's so much funnier getting hit with a bike than a car because you see it coming and just like, bam.
There's too many shows and movies now that do the gag of like someone standing on the street and then like a bus, a clearly like bad CGI bus hits them. And I'm kind of tired of that trope, but just getting hit by a bike is very funny.
It is very funny.
I recommend everyone watch that in slow motion for a good laugh. Well, Marge isn't willing to accept that her special little guy has no future. That's what I say every morning when I'm looking down at my naked self in the shower. Grandpa suggests Bart follow in his footsteps by installing an adding machine tape, which is, you know, how Abe got through the Great Depression. That, and, you know, letting the FBI know which Bugle Boys were about to turn a boogie-woogie. Marge refuses to give up on Bart, and Abe says to Homer he refuses to give up on him. But in fact, Abe's will is just 38 pages of yelling at Homer. Homer's very happy that he's in the will. Later that evening in this clip, Monty Burns' sleep is interrupted by the haunting voice of Rosebud's Frozen Peas spokesperson.
Charles,
Listen to me, Charles.
Not now, Satan.
I'm not Satan. I'm Orson Welles. Satan would sell wine before its time. Yes. Now, have you taken my warning seriously?
Oh, but it did. I've already started the Ark.
Very good. Now I must go. God commissioned me to direct a rainbow, and I've spent half my budget on indigo. The only answer is to play red myself.
Smithers, speed up production on the Ark. Put everyone on it. Ply them with all the rum and salt it takes.
Play red by yourself. Who is he, Taylor Swift? Oh, I thought I'd get more than that.
Is that better?
That's better, yeah.
Orson Welles sold wine before it was good.
He was a spokesperson in the 80s for a lot of things, but one such thing was a mid-grade champagne or sparkling wine. Their slogan was, we'll sell no wine before it's time. And so him saying that Satan would sell wine before it's time is a reference to that.
And my slogan is, I'll drink all the wine in no time.
Yeah.
Steve, let's open a Simpsons-themed wine bar.
Ooh, a Marge Merlot.
Uh-huh. I'm thinking of, like, very classy, like, the, like, boudoir photos of Marge and and Homer. Maybe all painted on, like, velvet, right?
Ooh, yeah.
But we'll still have, like, Simpsons trivia every Monday night.
Yeah, we'll have the Simpsons arcade game in the quarter.
Yeah. But we'll, like, make it look nice. Put some, like, doilies on it.
Yeah, yeah. Put velvet ropes around it.
Velvet ropes. I'm thinking toys. Toys is like a tea house. Wine bars are. I really like wine bars. They're really nice. Usually, like if they got like a nice hardwood floor, makes you like feel like you're in like Paris during the war, and like you're meeting up with other spies to liberate camps, you know, from the Germans. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
You don't have dreams of that? Like that was your job in the war?
I always have recurring dreams that I'm a French World War One soldier.
Well, maybe we were both in World War One and we were helping the spies.
That's very possible.
So you have that dream of the French soldier. I always have this dream of World War Two and everything's kind of crumbling around me. I'm with, I'm like in a bunker and I'm with my wife.
My wife.
And we're just like, I don't know, let's just kill each other. And then that's it.
Huh.
I had a really silly mustache, too, so I don't know.
Must have been a big Charlie Chaplin fan or something.
Yeah, I must have been. Maybe that's why I'm not a great painter.
How many testicles do you have?
One, two, three. No, we all know in our previous slides we were all Abraham Lincoln.
That's right. Why we love art so much.
That's why, you know, anytime anyone says they were reincarnated, they were always someone famous.
Yeah. Never just like, you were a peasant in Yugoslavia in the 18th century.
I actually don't have reoccurring dreams. So you said you have. So I believe you, Steve. I believe you were killed in World War One.
It's possible. I don't know.
I'm thinking,
but again, I wasn't like a war hero. It's just like a grunt.
I mean, that's what you'd be, you know.
Yeah.
We'll find out what our position is when like World War Three strikes.
Because
unfortunately, I think we're still like able. You know what? They'll probably give us like kitchen duty.
Ooh, I could do that.
Yeah, we'll cook for the troops.
Yeah, I could peel potatoes all day.
Yeah, or maybe like we'll be podcasters for the Armed Forces Radio.
Dateline 2025.
No, you know how like they have programs just for the service members.
Yeah, we'd be like USO folks.
Yeah.
I could do
all
that.
All right, so we cook and that's about it.
Yeah, we're like Robin Williams at Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah.
So at the Ark construction site, two workers tongue a salt lick while another tests a barrel of rum. Very funny gag. Up above, Homer, Lenny, and Carl enjoy a scaffold nap, Carl using his hammer to catch a slumbering Homer as he nearly falls to his death. Carl then wonders what they're building, and Lenny guesses that maybe it's a new Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and maybe this one will actually keep some people out.
I love that just that little animation bit of Homer literally almost falling to his death, but like Lenny just with his hammer sliding it back in, like like he's normal, like he does this all the time, and
yeah, just nonchalant about it.
Yeah, I mean, we do know that Homer cheats death every day, and Lenny and Carl are always there to help him.
That's right. So Lenny mentioned about the Rock and Roll, and maybe they'll actually keep somebody out. So that got me wondering, like, well, he's obviously making a reference to how open the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame supposedly is. But I figure that since this was coming out in January of 2018, then they wouldn't know the nominees for the following year for 2018. And obviously it's written, you know, maybe 2 years prior, but just for fun, I went and looked to see who was being inducted in 2017, the year prior. So we have ELO, Joan Baez, Journey, Pearl Jam, Tupac Secure, and Yes.
No.
Yes. Oh, God. That's good.
No, we're not doing it. So that was this year's episode that aired, or this is this year's?
This would be the previous year's from 2017. Oh,
okay. All right.
So, I mean, I guess he's making reference to maybe Tupac not being in there because he's not, quote unquote, rock.
They really need to change the name of the Rock and Roll Museum to...
I completely agree.
Just like the music museum, or like the pop music.
Pop music, yeah.
Because I'm totally fine with, you know, someone like Tupac being abducted. If they have a significant cultural foot stamp into like the music business,
yeah, then
by all means.
So for 2023 we have Kate Bush, somebody saw Stranger Things, Sheryl Crow, Missy Elliott, George Michael, Willie Nelson, Rage Against Machine, and the Spinners.
Willie Nelson hasn't been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this whole time.
Yeah,
that's kind of messed up. And I know he's predominantly country, but again, a right. very significant voice in music history
mm-hmm.
that he wasn't in. That's weird.
Yeah, it's so it's weird. All very weird.
I only care about the Podcaster Hall of Fame. Should we start the Podcasters Hall of Fame?
Sure.
Because they have like the Radio Hall of Fame, and they got the Music and Television Hall of Fame, baseball, basketball, you know, all these sports Hall of Fames.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time. We're going to start. We'll find a building to make it the official. You know, we'll work around like, yeah, you know, we'll get tax write-offs for this, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay. All right. So it's a nonprofit. Except for
like most podcasts.
Yeah. It'll be the Zip Recruiter Presents the Podcast Museum.
Presented to you by Bluetooth.
Yeah. I remember listening to like the Smodcast podcast way back, like when it started in like 2006, maybe
mm-hmm.
back then, seven, like Kevin Smith would be advertising like Fleshlights. So,
oh, yeah. I remember like even like Mark Maron used to do ads for like Adam and Eve.
Yeah. Oh, Adam and Eve. Okay. There you go. So, our honorary inductee will be for, because it'll be like advertisers like Adam and Eve. What was that one like cheating dating website?
Ashley Madison.
Yeah.
I don't know why I pulled that so quickly. it's nothing.
Like your only icon on your iPhone, by the way. It's weird. Who would you nominate like the first run of Podcast Hall of Fame? I would nominate Kevin Smith because he did Smodcast way back in the day. You got Jimmy Pardo.
Yeah, I was going to say Jimmy Pardo. Regardless of, you know, what you think of him now, you can't omit Ricky Gervais.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Joe Rogan. I mean, to get some clout and, you know, I think Joe Rogan, we have to induct him right away just so we get a lot of people there.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Ricky Gervais. Yeah. I mean, he was doing video podcasts. Yeah, I think that'd be a good one. Or, you know, to, you know, induct. Yeah. So Chris Hardwick.
Maybe. I mean, he was the first to kind of really have a successful network.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't talk about him anymore, but he was kind of huge for a minute.
Yeah. Mark Maron.
Mm-hmm.
Us.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Let's say
Smartless.
And you know who we're not going to induct ever?
Who's that?
The Office Ladies.
Of course not.
Except, thanks. You know, we'll be nice for the Office Ladies because, you know, they're members of SAG. So
oh, yeah,
we'll stand by them, I guess. All right. Well, let's go back to The Simpsons. So back at home, Lisa can't figure out how Ralph could possibly score higher than her. It's also a 1 point difference, Lisa. Just calm down.
Let right? go. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't tell a person to calm down. That's rude. She thinks about all of her self-esteem comes out from Tess as she pulls on the strings holding her pearl necklace together. And then, of course, the pearl's necklace breaks and sending all those pearls flying around to the ground. Lisa declares that she is not worse than Ralph and then slips on the pearls and falls to the ground. Pearls then turn into tiny little Ralph heads, all saying hi to one another. And then one Ralph head missing the string through his ears.
So Lisa decides to follow Ralph to watch, not judge him. And as we mentioned on the show before, we think that Ralph is actually kind of a Watu-like watcher, kind of maybe not from this world, but kind of above this world, kind of examining humankind. So it's interesting that Lisa's watching the watcher, and who watches the watchmen?
Rorschach.
I do every now and then because it's a good movie.
Hey, I heard it's being remade again, but to an animated film. So
I can see that working. So Lisa pulls out a list of observations about Ralph, that he has a round head, less hair, there. Mm-hmm. His dad's a cop. He doesn't blink. And he has Velcro shoes.
Oh, lucky.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about this. Like, I have a round head.
Yeah.
I have less hair.
Yeah.
My dad's not a cop. I could take or leave blinking, but sometimes it just feels really good to blink. But I do wish I had Velcro shoes.
You know, it's so funny that Lissa says he doesn't blink.
Mm-hmm.
Literally a second before she looks at Liz, you see Ralph blinking.
That's funny.
And then when he walks up the slide, he's blinking.
So yeah, he walks up the slide and then he leaps to the ground below, and he then weakly says, "I'm okay," as dirt falls from his mouth. Lisa then calls the Wiggum household. Also, Marge is determined to get to the bottom of Bart's test results in this clip.
"You have reached the Wiggum residence. If Ralph is stuck in something, press 1. If something is stuck in Ralph, press 2. If this is Ralph, Daddy is not in the phone. Do not open the phone looking for me."
"What are you doing?"
"The only thing I'm good at. Nothing."
"That tears it. We're going to see Professor Frink and find out exactly what happened on that test."
"Got a little present for you, Bart. It's called The Bible for the Slow."
"Hmm?" "He's not going to take it."
"Okily dokily."
"Professor Frink, your stupid test ruined my son's life."
"Hey, that test is like a son to me. I raised it from a quiz."
"I've known my son since he was born, and he's not anywhere near as stupid as your stupid test says he is. And if you think so, you're stupid, stupid, stupid."
"Wow, Marge, you really love Bart."
I just love the whole, Marge, just the whole rant of saying stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
Stupid, stupid, stupid. What did you think about the joke of that test is like a son to me? I raised it from a quiz.
I liked it.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's a dumb joke, but I kind of like
it. Yeah, very fun. Well, Professor Frink then rechecks his file, scanning through Sizzlek M, Stu, Disco, Smithers, Waylon, soon to be Wanda, until he lands on the Simpsons B, though, as Marge notices, the B is actually an H. It turns out that Bart has an above-average intelligence, or as many days there are in a year, which is 265, as Homer once said.
Exactly.
That was a score. While H. Simpson is the clod, having, as Frink puts it, the worst handwriting and brain in town. Homer introduces himself to Frink, and the professor offers him some water. Homer's like, smart water? No, not smart water.
I really don't appreciate...
smart water?
Well, yeah, it's worse than regular water. But the handwriting thing, because I have historically bad handwriting. And...
is it really historically? Is it in the history books?
I mean, it was, but nobody knew what I was talking about because
you're just like, what are these scribbles here?
Is that about Notre Dame or is that Christopher Columbus? I can't tell. No, I have really bad handwriting, and I always have, to the point where like I would have to stay after class and work on like my italic writing. And I just don't think it's a good barometer of intelligence, especially this day and age. Who writes anything?
Do they teach cursive in elementary schools anymore?
No, they probably teach like ass eating and TikToking.
I was hoping you'd say, yes, of course they teach cursives. I know all the cursives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Butt, ass, boob. Marge and Bart head home, but Homer stays behind, worried that he'll be the laughingstock when everyone finds out that he's the stupidest man in town, just as he has tweeted, or X'd, because now Twitter's X.
Yeah, great.
To get ahead of the story. Homer then goes to the movie theater, where instead of seeing Noah Baumbach's Brooklyn Bound, Homer's forced to see Nutjob 3, The Squirreling. He then pays a visit to the Maple Genius Bar, but is redirected to the Dum Dum Bar, where one guy spins around his chair, another uses his phone as an electric razor, and a third wears a dunce cap.
Do you think all of those guys in the Dum Dum Bar are just caricatures of like Simpsons writing staff?
Very possible, yeah.
They look very oddly specific. I don't know who those people are, but they look just like real people. All right, so Homer sees Sideshow Mel performing Shakespeare in the park and mutters to himself, looking for something he can understand. He finds across the street there's Sesame Street on Ice, which features explicit language. Very funny to me. And then Homer wonders to himself, why would Oscar skate in a trash can? That's a very smart observation.
That's not what dumb. I felt too, is yeah. Like, yeah, that's pretty smart. Why wouldn't Oscar?
He then runs over to the aquarium, where tickets are $10 for adults, $8 for seniors, and $30 for stupid people. Now I want there to be like at Disneyland, a sign that has that.
Yeah.
Stupid people. Any theme park, that'd be very funny. Homer buys a ticket looking to cover all his bases.
Cheer up here. One stupid, please.
Okay, you gave me 40. Here's $2 back. Unless you want splash insurance.
How much is that?
Another 10.
Here's 20.
And two more for you. Insurance doesn't cover entryway splashes.
Don't!
Hey, Elmer, we was watching Jeopardy, but tell you what, we'll just talk about shapes and colors now.
I like blue rectangles.
Rectangles? You know, Homer, the ones with four sides.
Listen, you! I've known my shape since I was 16!
Put them down, Homer, and I'll give you a cookie.
That's a coaster.
Whoa, dummy's wising up.
I'll take the cookie. Never thought I'd say this, but I'm too depressed for Moe's.
You know, they're making fun of Homer for being stupid, but they're A to A thinking about, oh, I like blue rectangles when they're just watching Jeopardy. Just goes to show you how smart that they aren't. Because they're just looking at blue rectangles.
Yeah. I don't understand the beginning of that clip, too. Like, what was funny about Homer's exchange of the money? I don't get it. That's what I would have done.
Yeah, I mean, got to pay for splash insurance.
Yeah.
And he clearly, you know, gave him $2 back. So it makes sense.
It made sense to me.
Yeah.
Huh, weird. No, I was wondering if the joke was like, Homer, we're watching Jeopardy. Sorry. Don't worry. Wheel of Fortune will be on for you after this. We always saw that as like, Wheel of Fortune's for the dummies. And
yeah.
Which I don't watch either.
I'm sure it'll get way smarter when Ryan Seacrest takes over.
I'm really excited to see what Pad Sajak does. He's going to be unhinged.
Oh, yeah.
He's going
to
have
nothing to lose.
He's going to be like QAnon commander after he retires.
Yeah, Fox News will start having game shows where it's just like, how white can you be? Who wants to be a nationalist?
I'm just glad Ryan Seacrest gets another job.
Yeah, he needs the work. And he's got a winning personality, so.
It was probably either him or Nick Cannon.
Yeah.
Nick Cannon has more jobs than he has kids, I think.
Mm-hmm, which is too many.
All right. So Homer then goes across the street because he's too depressed. So he goes to Schmoes, who welcomes him. And it just sounds like Mo. So
yeah,
that's kind of funny. Isn't usually the cross the street where the League of Extra Horny Gentlemen is located?
That's what I was thinking.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe they got a name change.
Yeah.
Well, later, Homer sits in his portion of the bed, depressed. You ever just curled up like that, like Homer does? Just no sheets on, you just curled up like that. Like, ah, oh, fuck this thing called life.
Awful. Yeah.
Marge tells him that what the entire world thinks of him doesn't affect how she sees him. So she then says that he has the hair and body of a dashing Friar Tuck. After they kiss, Homer asks Marge what she thinks of his brains. She responds that her favorite character, the Wizard of Oz, was always the Scarecrow. Because, of course, he didn't have a brain. So who's your favorite character from The Wizard of Oz?
That Cowardly Lion is pretty good.
You're not a fan of Toto?
I'm a friend of Dorothy, honestly.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Speaking of Toto, I didn't realize, like, I think it's, is it the drummer or maybe, like, the lead singer of Toto is John Williams' kid?
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, Joseph Williams. He's the vocalist for Toto. That's, yeah, John Williams' kids. Arguably, you know, Africa, one of the most catchy tunes from the 80s, right?
Yeah.
And his dad, all of his musical scores are all catchy tunes. So that's just something that's funny that Toto then scored the Dune movies. Like, well, we want John Williams. Well, we can't get John Williams. Can we get his son? Sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
We're coming to a clip here where Homer is offended by the fact that the Scarecrow is her favorite character. But Marge is willing to help Homer improve himself.
I knew it. Thanks to that test, you see me as stupid first and Homer third. I mean second. I know second.
I won't let you give up. We're going to start improving you.
Oh, Marge, no one ever did anything useful after the age of 39.
George W. Bush sobered up and became president.
Two huge mistakes.
Homie, this whole mix-up happened because of your sloppy handwriting. We'll start with that, improving your handwriting.
Right now, my hand just wants to crawl in my pocket and cry. Mm. Now, this hand is jealous.
Mm. I know where this is going.
I do too, but you say it first.
Snuggling.
Ooh.
I like Homer knowing second.
So, we're a couple years after the age 39. Steve, do you think we should sober up and become president now?
Those are two very stupid ideas.
Okay.
Also, the closed captioning on that is wrong because it spells two T-O-O rather than T-W-O.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
So back at the construction site, Lisa continues to trail Ralph, trying to understand his secret. Ralph spins around, saying that he's going to Disneyland, and then the two kids ride up an elevator to a beam. Ralph asks Lisa if she wants to see him do a cartwheel. Lisa begs him not to, but he does anyway, narrowly missing a beam hitting him and a weight flattening him. Chief Wiggum and Lou arrive on the scene, but Clancy isn't concerned because he's seen this before in cartoons. Sweet Pea, Mr. Magoo, they were fine. Lou asks about Sylvester the cat, and Chief Wiggum offers a sage advice, never be a cat in a cartoon, which I think is probably good advice.
Unless you're Heathcliff or Garfield.
That's true.
Yeah, even in The Simpsons, Snowball, too, has been killed many times around, like, Snowball 17 or whatever.
Yeah.
Let's try the other cat-related. I mean, obviously, Tom and Jerry. Is there a cat character in Disney?
That's a good
point. I don't think they have, like, they don't really have a cat that hangs out with. Well, you probably can't, you know, because Mickey Mouse, cats are a mortal enemy. I mean, they've had, you know, like, evil cats in cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't, like, a cat that walks around Disneyland or Disney World.
Right. Like, they had Bonkers in the 90s, but he's more of, like, a leopard. But yeah, there isn't, like, any, like, prominent...
Mickey should have, like, a pet cat that hangs out with Pluto, because then it could show that, like, no, these animals aren't fighting each other like other cartoons. They live in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't, like, the bad guys in DuckTales, weren't those cats? Or are they, like, wolves or...
They were dogs because they were the Beagle Boys.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And they went boogie boogie. but yeah, there aren't a lot of Disney cats, like especially in like, you know, old school cartoons.
Well, they probably like Walt didn't want that because there's Felix the cat. So he didn't want to have like a cat too. I don't know. I guess Nazis just don't like cats.
I mean, unless you read the comic book Mouse, then it's a whole different story.
I was referring to Walt Disney, him being a Nazi.
Right.
Okay. Well, I just think the whole bit here with this being a cartoon with Ralph at a construction site, very cartoon, it's very funny. It's like an homage to a classic slapstick. Ralph and Lisa are lifted onto a beam and spun around. Lisa seeks a fulcrum on the beam to stabilize it, while Ralph nearly slides off the beam carelessly. He's got just no care on his face, right? They both land safely, but Nelson runs over Ralph on his bike, saying, two for two. Great callback. Wiggum then confronts his son, while Lisa faces Professor Frink in this clip.
Young man, didn't I tell you to sit and stay in that house?
I thought you were talking to the dog.
We don't have a dog.
Then what's been pooping in my bedroom?
Professor, how on earth did he get a higher score than me?
Okay, Lisa, I am going to give you 10 more points for one of the most important skills of all, discovering huge flaws in my test without telling anyone.
You mean after all this, after all I've gone through, you're just going to fudge my score and I should be happy?
Well, after all, that's how I got into, I can't say it, the lowest of the Ivies. Oh, God, help me, Cornell, God!
It's okay, you're fine.
Oh, good.
Frank's from Cornell. We've been thinking he's a genius this whole time.
He was going to school with Andy Bernard.
Nard dog?
The very same.
We don't talk about that, Steve. That's for the office ladies.
The Lisa ladies.
Oh, man. What if they, once they're done with their podcast, they're like, oh, we're going to do a Simpsons rewatch. Oh, we're going to call the Lisa ladies.
That would be bad news for us, I feel.
Well, then we'll just switch over to The Office.
Right. We'll be The Office boys.
Yeah, we'll cover all work-based sitcoms. We'll do Workaholics, The IT Crowd.
Just shoot me.
Okay. Pew, pew, pew.
Thank you. sweet relief.
Ralph poops in his bedroom. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Blames the dog.
They don't have a dog. I'll use that excuse next time.
Yeah, I like how Ralph is just so indifferent towards everything. He's like, I'm just doing me.
Yep.
Should all be... like Ralph, except for not.
I agree. Yeah.
So back in the kitchen of 742 Evergreen Terrace, Marge is giving Homer a lesson in calligraphy, saying there's no limit to how neat his handwriting can get. Homer feels that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but just then, Grandpa passes by riding a unicycle while juggling and playing the harmonica. Marge offers to help Homer, reaching behind him and taking his hand, and then Unchained Melody begins to play, and Homer shouts at Lisa to turn off the oldie station, which I think is a great joke.
Yep.
Homer then writes letter after letter, page after page, practicing words like...
truth.
Beauty.
Self-esteem.
I before E, except after C.
Stay safe.
Eric Estrada.
And the signatures of John Hancock.
Coca-Cola.
And Jeebus H. Christ, Esquire. Jeebus, the King of Kings, gives Homer a thumbs up of approval.
And then later, as Marge is tending to some laundry, she finds a neatly written letter from Homer.
Dearest Marjorie, what words are adequate to describe your beauty? Like a bowling ball, fresh out of a polisher.
Oh, I've always dreamed Homer would write me cursive love letters.
You are as beautiful as your sisters are hideous.
Oh.
Very sweet of Homer writing love notes to Midge there.
Mm-hmm.
If you wrote love letters to your wife like that, or like notes like that, it would just look like there's a psycho killer in the house.
Yeah.
Look, Steve, you can say you have bad handwriting, but I also have bad handwriting.
It makes me feel better.
Yeah, maybe we should just take some calligraphy classes. No, that doesn't sound fun.
No, it doesn't.
What if it's a, you know how like the art and wine classes where you drink wine and paint a picture? What if they do wine and calligraphy? Sit there and drink and write.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. All right. We'll have that on Tuesday nights at our Simpsons-themed wine bar.
There we go.
Look, we're coming up with great ideas here. We'll have a, you know, it'll be a tapas bar kind of, right? Wine. Mm-hmm. That'd be a way to go.
Yeah.
Tapas, not topless.
Oh.
Yeah. We'll be topless, but.
Of course.
Anyway, so Marge walks into the bedroom and finds Homer asleep, surrounded by letters that he's been working on. Marge proudly tells herself that she's married to a writer, and then she steps into the bathroom. Homer takes a big swig of bourbon from the bottle as he has hidden underneath the sheets. I like the little bit where Marge, you know, she says, I'm married to a writer. And then kind of like, not ad lib, but it might be, here saying like, I really am. And that's like a nice, like, I guess, homage or, it's like a nice homage to Julie Kavner, who was married for the longest time to David Davis, who recently just passed away. But yeah, he was a writer.
Oh, wow. It's a nice little, it's a nice observation there.
Wrote for things like Newhart and, you know, Bob Newhart Show, and wrote Taxi episode. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Not David Davis, the member of Parliament of the United Kingdom, but David Davis, the TV producer and writer.
Right. And not Jim Davis, the creator of Garfield.
Yeah. You know, Jim Davis married a lasagna chef who only works on Mondays.
Of course. And loves to drink dog semen. So with the Ark now fully constructed, Mr. Burns welcomes the people he chose to be his slaves. Reindeer Wolfcastle won't be anybody's slave, but Monty isn't concerned as the doors are all sealed shut. All except for the one that Milhouse opens with ease, and seemingly the only door that they went through. As everyone exits, Monty reminds them that they haven't heard about the retirement plan and how, well, there isn't one. So with everyone gone, Monty flies off on his own. Smithers, dressed like a sailor, runs after the ship, upset that Monty asked him to go back for his slippers. And then on board the ship, there's a robot choking Mr. Burns, who doesn't really understand how the robot turned on him so quickly. But that's what we got. That's our episode.
That robot is very vicious looking. It's very Futurama-esque, and even like the Ark that he built looks very Futurama-esque.
So. It does look like the Planet Express ship, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I think we need to take a little break, regroup our thoughts and feelings, and come back and explode those feelings onto the listener's ears.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll be right back. Steve, we're back. Let's wrap up this week's episode. We'll discuss Frink Gets Testy. We'll talk about, you know, some of the jokes, scenes that we thought were great. We'll maybe find an MVJ out of those. We'll give a little quick review, maybe give it a ranking, find out what we're watching next week. But before all that, we'd like to do the fun, and the fun is the gift of giving. So something from this episode that inspired us to make it a gift to give to our fellow co-host. And I thought Steve likes to be comfortable.
I do.
And I thought you need some comfort hounds. So I got you three comfort hounds to cheer you up.
Nice.
And after you're happy, I will have them murdered so they become comfort hound rugs.
Wow. Very kind of you. And, you know, Craig, I thought I'd, you know, I have a gift for you as well. Got a couple of gifts, actually.
Oh, I get two.
One.
You got three dogs, so, I mean.
Yeah. And I say joy to the world if it's the three dog night.
And it's not like you have to actually care for the dogs. You can just play with them until you're done playing with them, because then I'll have them murdered. You don't have to worry about taking them for walks or cleaning up after them or even feeding them.
I mean, isn't that true of most dogs, though? You just.
That's true. Yeah. Sorry, dog owners out there. We're just making a joke. We love your pooches.
Mm-hmm. We don't want to kill your dogs.
Yeah, we won't kill your dogs, but we will kill your babies.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Babies meaning like your creative ideas. You know, if you got an idea for a silly restaurant, we're going to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
I meant that in that creative sense, kill your babies. You guys know that term, right? Kill your babies.
Yeah.
Jeez, I'm not talking about actually killing your children. Gosh. Maybe Steve was. I don't know.
I mean, I think both babies can die.
Oh, God, Jesus.
Well, Craig, for you, I know you're a fan of the higher arts, which is why I got you a special limited edition Laserdisc of Dr. Detroit with extra bonus features and audio commentary by Donna Dixon and Dan Aykroyd, as well as a microwave that you could float in the pool with a mean burrito inside of it. So you can enjoy poolside the fine work of Dr. Detroit and Howard Hessman as a pimp while you munch on a delicious burrito.
Dr. Detroit Laserdisc? Did they even exist on Laserdisc?
Probably not.
Want to see how much you spent on it. All right. Our first Laserdisc, $16 with $6 shipping. Another one is $17.56. So Steve roughly paid about $20 probably for this Dr. Detroit Laserdisc.
I also bought you a microwave.
Steve, everyone has a microwave. What am I going to do with two microwaves? This gift sucks. I'm sorry. I'm not giving a take anymore. You can have it back.
Fine.
That's very rude of me. Are the fans gonna? Are they gonna be mad at me for refusing your gift?
Well, I'm gonna keep the dogs, and I'm not gonna turn them into rugs. I'm gonna turn them into my beloved pets, and I'm gonna sick them on you the next time you're over at my house.
Fine. Then I'm going to save all the babies. No babies die. We did it.
You're welcome, conservatives.
Yeah. Okay, argument over. Steve, what from this episode made you chuckle, laugh?
Well, I did really enjoy Ralph's whole performance and Lisa's kind of frustration with him as being 1 point better than him, even if it was an anomaly. I really enjoyed the bit at the construction site. I think that was classic humor. I also loved how dumb Homer was. He's delightfully stupid in this episode, the aquarium bit. But I think if I have to give an MBJ to anybody, I think I'm going to give it to Orson Welles or Maurice LaMarche.
There you go.
I think he was just a lot of fun. I love that impression, and I just think it's just a good time all around. What about you, Craig?
MBJ-wise, I think I'll just give it to Hank Azaria because he got to sing as Frink,
ooh, yeah,
which is probably a tough job, but it is fun to hear Maurice LaMarche as Orson Welles is great. My favorite scene, I think, is still Bart getting hit by by Nelson and his bike. That just was really funny to me. And yes, the Ralph stuff was great. And yeah, there you go. All in all, Steve, what did you think of this episode?
I think that this is a very odd episode in a weird way, because the premise is like the beginning of the apocalypse, but not, because we're so busy with one test, one part of an apocalypse, which is the test to find the best. It almost doesn't feel like a fleshed out idea, but that being said, I think it kind of works for me. The concept of Burns being like, okay, the world is ending because Nostradamus said so. So I need a team of geniuses so I can presumably escape to another planet. It's a weird, funny concept that I kind of like. And I think that the way that the plot is divided into having, you know, Marge worried that Bart is not worthy, Homer realizing that he's not worthy, and then Lisa dealing with her own insecurity, I think it all works fairly well. And I think it was a lot of fun, and it made me laugh. You know, we've had a few episodes recently that were very family focused on, you know, a smaller story about the Simpsons, just the, you know, the core family. And I think this episode does a nice job of balancing out the core family and Springfield at large. I think it was fun to revisit Mensa and see the new members. All in all, I had a good time with this episode, so if I had to give it a score, and I guess I do, I'm going to go obvious and say out of 500, I'm going to give this a little bit smarter than Marge, or a little bit better than Marge, I guess, not smarter, and give this a 375 out of 500. What are your thoughts, Craig?
This episode, who's the protagonist of this episode?
is it Frink? Is it...
So this episode has like a lot of, like you said, kind of like ideas. And I wonder if this was like maybe could have been structured almost like 22 short films about Springfield.
Mm.
So here's the idea. Mensa is going to be a big part of it. They're going to figure out the smart people. And then it does kind of like delve into just the family. Like no one else in Springfield cares about this score except for the Simpsons family.
That's true.
Lisa's just her whole plot line of following Ralph. It's one of those episodes of Simpsons where it's cartoony and not a sitcom, like not more like realistic. Yeah, you know what? Mm-hmm. There's episodes of Simpsons where everything's kind of grounded in reality and there's always some like cartoon type of jokes, but this was just kind of like a full-on wacky cartoon for Lisa. You know, there's also a message there we can't rely on this randomized questions and answer sheets to really know how smart a person is. A test can never really tell a person's intelligence.
Right. And IQ tests are not a good barometer of actual human intelligence.
And that's the point Frink makes up too, is like figuring out who's, it doesn't matter if they're smart, but also what kind of value they bring to a society or what kind of person they are. If they're a caring, kind person, that has a lot of value too, besides just being smart.
Mm-hmm.
I did have fun with it. Like I said, the Bart stuff there, Homer at the water park with the message that we all kind of get is like your worth is on your human being and not your intelligence. We get it. I don't know if this is a skip for me, but like at the end of the day, Homer just gets better handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess that's one way to, you know, practice your handwriting. There's a message. Be good to your spouse. And Lisa, who cares if someone is smarter than you, even though he's clearly not? And again, that was just because you're all about numbers and tests.
It is kind of a dumb episode.
Yeah.
That is kind of messy and, you know, it is very cartoony.
So you gave it like a 75, like a 75%. If we're talking like numbers like this episode is, but you still liked it. And a C, it's an above C, which is above mm-hmm. average. So I have to probably go like a little bit, maybe a little bit lower. If I gave it a ranking to be in Mensa, your IQ has to be 132. I'm going to give this the ranking of my IQ, 86.
Okay.
I don't know what my IQ is, but it's probably 86.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they say whenever you go to a bar.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, he's 86.
So it might be just a skip for me. But that's again, fair. Some fun stuff. Maybe I was in the mindset for this episode. Maybe if I watched it again, I would appreciate it more. But yeah. All right.
But yeah, I think you're totally valid. It's certainly far from a perfect episode. I get you.
Well, Steve, we can agree to disagree. Or is it to disagree to agree? Or is it tomato or potato?
I say tomato.
And I say patutu. Remember how dumb our vice president was, Dan Quayle, who spelled potato wrong? What a fucking moron.
Luckily, we've had nothing that dumb in the White House since then. It's the worst vice president we could ever have.
Thank God we dodged the bullet with not electing Howard Dean president, because remember he said like, yeah!
Yeah, he got excited that one time.
It was the worst. You know what's not the worst? The Simpsons. And continuing this podcast and find out what we're watching next week.
Well, to do that, we're going to need that Wheel of Random.
Oh, yeah. Let's go ahead and bust it out and spin it to see what season we are in.
Ba-doop.
We got season 22.
Season 22.
All right, Steve, let's give the old spin a wheel a spin again for the episode number.
All righty, here we go.
Boo-doop. Episode 21, Steve. Season 22, ooh. Episode 21. What do you think the title is?
Let's see. 22, 21. So we're probably talking around April or May of, 2011?
Originally aired May 15, 2011. Yes.
So we're prepping for another election, maybe. So we could maybe get political, although we're not a political podcast. Mm-hmm. May 15th, you say? That's kind of around Mother's Day.
Mm.
So.
R.I.P.
Thank you.
To all the mothers out there who are dead.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I'm going to say the mommy game.
You are not even close. It is 500 keys.
500 keys.
Now, what could that possibly be about?
I'm going to assume that Professor Frink, we're going to have another Frink episode. He invents a cloning machine, and it's all great because they can, clone people to do other work so they can have simpler lives. But guest star Alicia Keys visits Springfield and accidentally goes through the machine 499 times. And then there's just Springfield is overrun with people thinking about how New York is a city. And they're just playing their piano, but it's too much because nobody can do anything because Alicia Keys is everywhere you go. Am I 100% right?
I kind of wasn't paying attention to what you're saying. So like that's every fair. Other podcasters, they don't pay attention to their co-hosts. You said something about a vasectomy.
Sure.
No, it has nothing to do with Alicia Keys. She's not in it. And none of that makes sense.
Okay, fine.
The synopsis here on Simpsons Wiki, it's a long one here. You have to read it out loud. Usually these synopsis are like, Bart gets a dog, you know? But this one says, Lisa tries to return a key to Springfield Elementary, but she stumbles upon an abandoned classroom in the basement. She attempts to tell Principal Skinner about the room, but when she returns, a bookcase blocks the dusty walls and cobwebs leading to the room. Lisa becomes suspicious about a writing on the blackboard, which involves bus 23, a former bus used by the school on a field trip that never returned. Lisa and Bart, who just won the key to the city, team up with Homer, who has stolen the Duff Blimp, to try to find the mysterious bus 23, which is submerged below the icy waters of the river. Meanwhile, Marge is on a continuous search for her noisy anniversary present. So we don't have to review the episode. We just told you what it was.
It seems like we don't need to review the next five episodes.
Yeah.
What doesn't happen in this episode?
There's a guest star, but I think it's don't get your hopes up guest star. Because it says guest stars Albert Brooks as Hank Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he is actually in the main story.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I don't want to get our fans' hopes up with Albert Brooks returning as Hank Scorpio. So I'll just give it away. From Simpsons Wiki, it says the title screen says Hank Scorpio flies across the screen in a Globex Corporation jet, fires two missiles, and exclaims, "It was this or a Porsche." So that's your only Hank Scorpio. So gotcha. I was hoping I saw, "Ooh, Hank Scorpio." No.
Yeah, but nope.
Also, this is called 500 Keys. Yes, the episode 485. Shouldn't they waited till episode 500 to call it 500 Keys?
That would make sense.
Only 15 more away, they could have. Steve, obviously you don't remember this episode.
No recollection. How about you?
Yeah, I don't either. I don't even know that opening title screen gag. So I guess Hank Scorpio has returned.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, Steve, you know what else is fascinating? Our listeners.
That's right.
And we want to hear from you. It's simple. All you got to do is follow us on social media, like Instagram or Threads, Facebook, at 138Simpsons.
And you can always email us at 138Simpsons@gmail.com. And hey, if you're so kind, go to your favorite podcatching app and leave us 5 stars or the equivalent. But you don't need to write a real review. Just tell us what prediction are you fearing every night when you try and go to sleep?
Yeah, besides the social media following and the emails, I forgot to mention, we also have a YouTube page, which is just the podcast, but you can see a picture of us in Simpsons form. There's no actual video yet. Someday we'll do something with that, I guess.
Maybe.
It's youtube.com/@13Simpsons. Yeah. We have TeePublic's site, teepublic.com/user/NoEgrumpBoys. There's some cool, just get our logo on a new tie-dye t-shirt. How fun is that?
Yeah. Where are all your fish shows?
Yeah, go to a concert this summer, rocking that shirt. Everyone's going to be so jealous of you.
Like, you're the coolest kid in the field.
Wear it at a Dave Matthews concert, and he's like, I'm not dropping shit on you. What other mission statements do we have to tell our fine listeners?
You can also go to your podcatching app while you're there and leave us a voicemail. Ask us a question. Tell us whatever you want.
Yeah, we want to hear from all of you.
And also, hey, tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell a complete stranger. We want more listeners. So, every little bit helps. And we appreciate you listening.
That's right. For this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And remember, I'm too depressed for Moe's.
Never be a cat in a cartoon.
What's been pooping in my bedroom?